9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Well, hey, welcome out and abouters. You are, well, you're listening to Out and About. That's what you're listening to. And you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 on your FM dial, or perhaps you're even streaming. I don't know. I can't tell that from this end. Not yet. Not yet. I probably will someday, though, right? Here we go. We are going, I'm really excited about today's show because it's fun because I get to hang out with an old buddy of mine, Pam Kingsley. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Maeve.
It's so good to see you.
It's so good to see you too.
I mean, we just get together and we laugh and we have a good time.
I convulse with laughter.
That's good. I mean, it's good to be, have like, it's like St. Vitus dance, but laughing. Yeah, so we were just having a few laughs out there. You know, I was thinking, so the last project that we worked on, which you weren't able to talk about because you were sick.
Yes.
And that was, we did Running for My Life, yes. which was a look at congressional women who had to run from the January 6th attackers.
Yes.
And we thought that might have an impact on the election.
Well, I have to tell you that many people who saw it and got back to me thought it was terrific.
Yeah, it turned out really good.
The women from this community that did the videos of these congresswomen were wonderful.
Yeah, weren't they great?
They were so, so believable and passionate about the project. And I don't know that we thanked them enough.
No,
for what they did.
Yeah, it was great.
And,
you know, we weren't victorious, I don't think. But, you know, maybe this is what I'm thinking, is that maybe when people watched it, they thought maybe it was like a workout video. Like if you vote fascist sin, you'll be running a lot and you'll be in good shape. And so, you know, maybe... I don't know.
Is it too early? Fondest fascist workout?
Yes. Too early?
Oh, way too early.
Maybe too late. I don't know. So now, Pam, you and I met during the vagina monologues.
We did.
That was like 2017, I think. Was it?
That's when we started rehearsing, and it actually opened in February of 2018.
Oh, of 2018. Okay.
But we started on the project, I think, in November, maybe?
Yeah. That was
Dawn Taylor Reinhardt directed that.
That's right, she did.
Yes, and Josephine Keefe produced it.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. And that was kind of my return to theatrical endeavors.
You are wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you. And so were you.
Very moving.
You were too. And we sat kind of together up there and
we did
our thing and we became friends after that. And I don't know if we've worked on a lot of other projects together. Have we? I mean, we've seen each other and each other's stuff.
I worked on your Planet Nine.
Oh, that's right. We did Planet Nine from Outer Space. How could I forget?
I don't know.
Extravaganza.
That was like...
Or Plan Nine from Outer Space.
Plan Nine.
Yeah. How can I forget that? That was great. And you were wonderful in it. You cracked me up.
You were wonderful too, Doctor.
Yeah, every time you crack me up, you just do such great voices in person. And I think a lot of people probably know you from your acting chops because you've been in Spokane acting a long time.
Well, I used to act a lot a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was here for a little over 15 years and did a lot of theater. And then I went away, but I came back about 7 years ago. And I act maybe once a year.
Yeah.
Because I'm old now.
Well, you know, that was originally, we were going to talk about a show about that.
But young at heart.
Exactly. But that was going to be the original. Remember, like a couple years ago, maybe we said we should do a show about aging as an actor and the roles that that you don't get anymore.
Didn't we do that show?
We never did it.
Oh.
But we'll do a little bit of that
maybe
today.
Maybe I did it in my mind.
Oh, you might have. And maybe you transmitted it. Maybe there were listeners. I don't know. But we'll talk a little.
Foil hair.
Well, you know, and you are, I think a lot of people don't know that you are really an accomplished playwright. Would you feel comfortable saying you're an accomplished?
Well, I actually finished plays.
Well, so, you actually won an award. Minister of Sorrow won the 2023 Appalachian Playwriting Festival in North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was way cool.
And I got to see Minister of Sorrow when it was being workshopped, basically.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was pretty good. That was really good. And it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minister of Sorrow was workshopped by a Spokane Playwrights Lab.
I had those guys on a long time ago, but it's been a long time.
Yeah, they were so wonderful and helpful, and the audience feedback is everything to a playwright, everything, because you get firsthand what the audience felt, thought, might want to see different.
Right, and they had a lot of questions for you, too. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool. I thought, man, that must be interesting to be in this process and get questions and, you know, have people kind of maybe second guess where you went with something or ask you why. And, you know, and sometimes I would imagine it's like, because I wanted to, would be the answer. But and we're going to have not this week, but the week after, we're going to have folks on from Minister of Sorrow.
December 3,
So I don't want to talk too much about it, other than it's...
December 6th through the 22nd at Stage Left Theater.
That's right.
Be square.
Yeah, it'll be cool, and that's going to be... I haven't seen the set for it yet. I haven't seen anything yet, so...
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, we had the little gala thing there the other night.
So
things weren't built yet.
The set is going to be wonderful.
Yeah. And, did you decide on getting a mechanical horse for it or a pantomime horse? Would that ruin the effects to tell people?
Well, I kind of don't want to
to
give it away.
Okay. All right.
I mean, if they're coming for the horse.
Yeah. Come for the horse,
stay for the play.
Yes. So, when you set out, and so you've written how many plays altogether? Do you think that have been performed?
That have actually been produced about, I want to say, 16.
Wow. When did you start?
I started a long time ago. I mean, my degrees are in theater, and if you're taking theater courses, you're bound to write a play.
Yeah, right.
You know, as a student. And then I taught a little bit. I taught playwriting at various spots, mostly here in the Pacific Northwest, but a little bit also back east. And I wrote plays, but I never shared them with anyone. I was busy doing other things. It wasn't until I actually returned to Spokane about 7 years ago that I decided to share a play at the Playwrights Festival. I entered it under a pseudonym, a nom de plume.
What was your nom de plume?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, okay.
Because I might want to
use it again. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, then you can't tell me what the play is either, then, can you?
Sure. It was Donnie and Duty.
Okay. I didn't see it.
And it got accepted under this nom de plume.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I had to say who I was. And then... you can't do it again.
Yeah, that's true.
In the same,
that's true. You can't show up in a disguise.
Put on a fake nose and a mustache. Yes. I couldn't.
You can't do that.
I couldn't do that. But after that happened, I felt I could share my work. You know, that
so
it
was
might
this a play
viable.
That you wrote specifically for the festival, or did
yes.
you just had it? Okay, so after you wrote this play specifically, mm-hmm. and it got accepted, and I would assume probably lauds and pundits around it. Did you?
I don't know, but Kathy Doyle Leip and Gary Pierce were in it. And they were wonderful. And so I was thrilled.
What is it like to see characters that you've written performed? I mean, because you've got actually, you know, people might not know, but you don't go and tell people how to do this. There's a director. You write
right.
your piece, you step back, a director comes
right.
in. Is it an altogether different experience than when you've written it and read it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I write, I see things as a movie. I think a lot of writers do.
Yeah.
So I go to bed and it happens kind of as a movie in my head. So
right.
I see these characters. And when someone else is cast, it's different than from what I
sure.
imagined
sure.
it might be. But it's always fascinating and wonderful.
I would imagine it would be really interesting when you see like the choices that directors and actors make and that you go, oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that in my piece when I wrote it, but they did this thing and oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is pretty cool. As a matter of fact, to that particular point, because I won for Minister of Sorrow, just a little side trip here, the Appalachian Playwriting Festival, one of the perks of that was that Minister of Sorrow, that iteration, because it was after that that I actually workshopped it, and the one you're going to see is really the premiere at
oh.
stage left.
Oh, no kidding.
This was the one I wrote for the festival.
Okay.
but the one... excuse me, at stage left really is the premiere. And the play actually started at stage left as an 8-minute monologue for Masterpiece Monologues that stage left was wonderful in videoing and streaming online when we were all
oh,
isolated
right.
during COVID.
Yeah, during COVID.
And stage left stepped up and said, we're going to entertain you anyway.
Yeah.
It was so wonderful. But anyway,
yeah.
getting back to the point, one of the perks of winning this Appalachian Playwriting Festival was that Minister of Sorrow opened their 77th season at the Parkway Playhouse, which was just outside of Asheville, North Carolina.
Wow.
And that was this last
yeah.
May. And 6 months later,
wow.
the devastation there is
yeah.
just awful. But talking about characters, the woman who... It's a one-woman show.
Yeah, we should tell people a little bit about what the show is.
It's a one-woman show with a muse about Packhorse Librarian. And it's her story as... she runs from a very troubling part of her life, and it's all the people she meets in Appalachia as she delivers books.
And so what is a Packhorse Librarian?
Packhorse Librarian is a woman who has basically dedicated her life for a small stipend to either ride a pack mule, big old donkey horse, or a regular horse, and Kentucky, Appalachian Kentucky horses are like mountain goats. They're used to going up those back traces and
yeah.
all of that. Anyway, a Packhorse Librarian goes way back into the hills and reaches folk that otherwise would be left out of the world, left out of society, that never get off that mountain, that are hidden back there.
And so then they would have books from which they would choose, that, or they would order books, or how?
Well, many of them couldn't read. And a lot of times the pack horse librarians read to them.
Just read them the stories.
And occasionally they could spend some time teaching a little bit the letters to the children. And all of this is in this particular play.
Right. What year would you say this took?
This took place as part of the Work Progress administration.
Okay.
Roosevelt's.
So, yeah, so the WWP.
This is 1937 is when I said it.
Okay, 37, okay.
Uh-huh. But the years, I think 34 to about 38 or so, that's when they got money to actually get this up and going.
So how did you learn about this to begin with?
And this is my favorite story. I belong to a wonderful book club. And one of the women in this book club suggested that we look at a novel about a pack horse librarian, a fictional novel about pack horse librarian. And I said, what? Pack horse librarian? Well, that fascinated me so much. I did this deep dive. I never read the book.
I think it'd be kind of dangerous too.
Well, it might be. I just was so fascinated trying to see what the history was.
Yeah.
And it fascinated me to a point where I needed to write about it.
And so did you find, like, as soon as you, was it like one continuous process? So you learned about it, you're teaching yourself about it, and you're like, I'm going to write about this. Or did it kind of percolate for a while?
Percolated.
Yeah.
It had to percolate because the story I tell isn't just a straight story about, you know, putting books in a bag and slogging up hills. It's really a story about a woman and what she's gone through.
I want to talk when we come back after a 20-minute break. I want to talk a lot about the process and inspiration and all that stuff. But before we go, just kind of a broad question. Do you find in your works that you've written, is there a common thread that kind of runs through them, or are they all very different? Or when you're looking back on it, do you say, oh, you know, it's interesting that I have this through all my works?
My psyche. to tell you what's going on now in my writing over the last, since I've been doing it here in Spokane, is that I write a lot of plays for me to do that I never get to do.
Okay, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you.
Because the characters are of a certain age usually.
Yes, yeah.
This particular character's supposed to be in her 40s, but getting back to when you write something and then you get to see it, in North Carolina, the woman who played, wonderful actress, who played that iteration of Minister of Sorrow was 65.
Oh, wow.
Really, really talented regional actress. And Hazel Bean, who is taking on this one-woman show of as Emma in Minister of Sorrow here, is in her 30s.
Wow.
So I have seen both those ages play this role, and wow.
Would it be a role that you would want to play?
Oh, I couldn't play it anymore.
Yeah.
I believe that I am past.
You've aged out on
aged. That's a terrible thing to think about, but I think I've aged out of Emma.
Yeah. But I guess going back to the question is, like, so you would see, for quite a few of your plays, you would see yourself in them, the ones that you've written.
Well, yeah, because I kind of, I act out the roles when I'm writing them.
Right.
So even though I don't get to do them on stage, I do them in my living room or my kitchen when I'm brushing my teeth.
Right, okay. So I've got a break, but okay. I want to ask you one last question, because I've got so many questions to ask you. What, why, I know your background is in theater, but are you ever tempted to take these stories and make them into a, novelize them or short, make them into a short story? What is it about, because I struggle with this sometimes too. Like I'm writing a story, but I go, gosh, this would this be better as a play, you know, and of course with myself in it, but,
but we share that sister.
Right. But, you know, so is there, do you ever think about doing that or have you done that?
No, I, theater is such a beautiful form of storytelling that, and my heart is there, and I did have someone ask me, why didn't you write this as a book? And it was because I wanted this woman to engage with an audience in this storytelling, the immediacy of the storytelling. And it turned out that it works. Yeah. And when you see Hazel Bean, oh, she's wonderful.
Well, you know, there's something about, to me, and this is for writing, it's like the dialogue. I love writing dialogue. You know, and to me, just like you were talking about a movie, it's like I have these characters and sometimes they start saying things like, why are you, I didn't want you to say that. Why are you going down this road, you know?
Right.
And so they kind of take on their own life. And,
yes.
And so I find that much more fun to write dialogue than to write like, this is the scene, you know? Blah, blah. Okay. So we're going to do our 20 minute after the hour stuff, but I'm going to play a little song before we go. Or as I'm loading up stuff on the computer, I have my friend Dan Gore, who is a bluegrass musician. He put out an album called Ways That Are Dark, and it's all about music from Appalachia.
Oh, wonderful.
And he, his work actually was sold in a lot of the national parks and stuff. So, I'm going to play some of that. I don't know if that's ever been on the radio.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I'll play that while I'm loading this stuff up and then we'll be right back. So stay tuned, everybody.
Smoky paths to lead back to a Scots old cutty sark. In the hills there are ways that are dark. There are ways in the mountains of losing all your sins. White lightning puts a bumbling in your head. If you fought your phone pop's skull, it'll be your last remark. In the hills there are ways that are dark. There are ways that are dark as a leaf from the past. Ancient tones haunt the hollers and the coves. There are bones of the raven that flew from Noah's Ark. In the hills there are ways that are dark. And the coast.
Well, it looks like we're having some technical difficulties here. I am going to, here's the problem. Operator error. Here we go.
November 11th through the 15th. Monday, Windows, David Terrell, and the Strangerers at Mootsie's. Open mic with Jamerson Cheer and Ben 10 at the Red Room and Imagine Jazz at the Bad Seed. Monday and Tuesday, open jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, all-star jam with Jerry Lee Raines at Zola. Wednesday, the Rusty Jackson Band at the Valley Eagles. Live band karaoke and open mic at 9 Bar and Bistro. Open mic with Derek Hart at the Checkerboard and open jam at the Red Room. Thursday, Bear and Blue at Bolo's. Villa Blues and Jazz at Emmeru's. Just Plain Darren at QQ Sushi. And Trifecta at Riverside Place. Friday, Haywire at the Grain Shed. Nate Ostrander at AK Asian. Unto Others, Hoaxed and Cruel Velvet at the Big Dipper. Dr. CC and the Elixir and Madrona Hollow at Jackson Street. Agents of Rock at Bolo's. Royale at Zola. And Caitlin Butts and Ken Pomeroy at the District. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Hey there, folks. Join me for a musical trip along Americana Avenue. Now on Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. Hear the greatest progressive songwriters from yesterday and today. Each week, I'll feature a specific artist and a vinyl spin of the week. It's music that plays to the human condition, Wednesdays at 6 on Thin Air Community Radio.
KYRS exists because of the support of the public. We thank you for giving a little back with sustaining monthly support to continue independent music, local interest, and progressive news programming that is refreshing, engaging, and helps expand perspectives. Just text GIVEKYRS to 44321 and help keep KYRS on the air.
November marks Global Entrepreneurship Month, a time to celebrate innovators and connect entrepreneurs with the resources and networks they need to succeed. At Startup Spokane, a partnership between Spokane Public Library and Spokane County Library District, we're committed to making Spokane the most equitable place to start, run, and grow a business. This month, we're offering a series of events to inspire and support entrepreneurs at every stage. Information available at SpokaneLibrary.org/celebrating global entrepreneurship. Why don't you just Google, because this is really a mouthful. Just Google Global Entrepreneurship Month at the Spokane Library. It'll take you there. I guarantee it. Money back guarantee. All right. Now I can do the underwriting at 420 as well. Now that's been a change. Here we go. Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street, open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. Out and About receives support from KSPS, PBS-TV's Inland Session Series, every Monday at 7:30 p.m. on KSPS PBS, Channel 7.1, and streaming at kspss.org. Inland Sessions episode archive and podcast featuring extended interviews and stripped-down performances available at kspss.org/inlandsessions. And welcome back, everybody. My mouth feels very tired. And, you know, sometimes I have like this way I can look and just watch the wheels coming off of what I'm doing. And this was kind of entertaining for me to watch that happen.
I'm so happy you're entertained.
Yeah. It probably wasn't as much fun for listeners, but it was for me.
Like,
why is this playing? Okay. So I'm talking to my friend Pam Kingsley, who is a playwright, an actor, all sorts of things, but we're talking mostly about playwriting. And
I just wanted to add something real quick.
All right.
Is that after listening to that wonderful music?
Oh, yeah.
That your friend, your blue
girl. Yeah, Dan
friend,
Gore, Ways That Are Dark. Yeah.
Yes. That there is one other person involved on stage in this play as the muse musician, and that's Joey Quintana. And he is absolutely wonderful, plays banjo, guitar and mandolin, the music of the mountains.
Wow, how cool.
Yes. So I didn't want to forget.
So people are going to get an evening of entertainment in a lot of ways.
I think they will. I think they will be entertained in many ways.
Okay. So.
Sorry.
Thank you. What is the process like for you? Do you set aside a certain time of day that you write, or do you just... I mean, I don't think anybody does this, just waits for the muse to strike them, or else, you know, you never do it. How do you do it?
Usually, something will capture my interest. And if it captures my interest and I start doing a little bit of a deep dive on it, and it's really singing to me, then I'll often dream about it.
Okay.
And from the dream... fugue.
Yeah, the fugue state.
The fugues.
I want to move to the fugue state.
The fugue state. Comes idea for my work.
Okay.
Usually.
Okay, that's the idea, but you have to sit down and write it. How do you sit down and write it?
Well, I have to figure out, I'm not great at as an outliner. Many playwrights will do an outline, a complete outline of their play. I know where I want to end, usually.
Right. How to start and where to end.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what happens in the meantime, if you can find yourself a character or two that really speaks to you, they take it over.
Yeah.
They will take you right through it. And that's what usually happens to me.
Okay.
In fact, I was saying today to someone that I didn't know what was going to happen at the end of Minister of Sorrow until Emma walked through a door. And it surprised the heck out of me.
Right.
What happened.
Do you like to write in the morning? Do you like to write any time?
Well, I'm probably freshest anymore between about 10 and 2.
Yeah.
So those are my times for writing.
Do you write every day?
No.
No.
No, because some days you just can't.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not coming. I have friends who playwright friends who say, just sit down and write a paragraph. Just a paragraph. That doesn't do it for me. I'm better off if I just go away and leave it, because I come back to it much more interested.
Will you write as long as you're on a roll, or will you say, okay, I've sat here for 3 hours, I've written... I need to change the channel, do something different, walk around.
Now, there have been quite a few times where I will have looked up and 6-7 hours have gone by.
Yeah. Do you like to write on a computer, or do you like to write? How do you write it out?
Computer.
Computer, yeah.
Yeah. I know some people like longhand, which I can't imagine.
No.
You know? But there's that sensory thing, I think. The eye, hand, and I do write, when I act, I write my lines out often, but I always do it on a keyboard.
Yeah, say that, and there's something, I don't know, meditative, I think, about the keyboard with your fingers moving. I like almost like you're playing an instrument or something. And I really like that. Incidentally, I've started learning my lines.
Have you? We should talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. So this is a project, another project. That's going to be in April.
Before we go to that, though, I really must say, Minister of Sorrow at Stage Left Theater, directed by the amazing Sarah Damon.
Who will talk to her in a couple.
Will you be talking to her and starring, I guess you would say, Hazel Bean. Wonderful, wonderful actress. I really think you would enjoy this play.
December 6th.
December 6th through the 22nd.
Yeah.
Go to Appalachia for Christmas.
Yeah, go to Appalachia for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Do your own hillbilly elegy.
You know, I have to say, in my head, all of these cabinet nominations are the cover of Mad Magazine.
I know.
With Alfred E. Newman.
Did you hear about
with all of oh my gosh.
I know. I just giggle each time. Did you, hear who's going to be heading up Medicare Medicaid today?
No.
Dr. Oz.
No.
Yes. Yeah, it's
gosh.
Don't get me started. I mean, but, you know, I just think, I'm wondering, like, is Dr. Phil going to be the Surgeon General?
Oh, my gosh.
I hope so. Please.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's just.
I mean, could you believe this in your wildest imagination?
I'm actually writing a story.
I wonder if this is a goof. I wonder if this is a goof on us.
Yeah, well... I'm writing a story about that right now. So,
oh, good.
Yeah. But where were we going with this? I forgot. We were talking about, stage left doing this thing.
Yes.
And then we were going to talk a little bit about Boxes, which is another one of your plays, which I got to be in when it was performed online.
Right, during COVID.
During COVID, yeah.
Out of San Francisco.
Yeah, and it was wild because I think
wonderful.
But the director was like someplace else, and the other person.
Everybody was.
We're all across the nation,
And it all came together via Zoom.
Zoom, yeah, yeah.
Weird times, but boy, nothing will stop theater.
No, and I have to say, I felt very energized to do things during that time.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was very important, I think.
Yeah. And so Boxes is another one of your plays, which has received some acclaim.
It received the Audience Choice Award at the 2022 Playwrights Forum Festival. And it was selected for the Humanity Festival in Greater Louisville. It's been in several festivals, but that was the short, and I decided, just like with Minister of Sorrow, I decided to, I couldn't let those two characters of Rooney and Beep go.
No.
And wrote the full length.
Yeah. I'm on page 10 of memorization.
Are you?
So far. Yes.
Good.
Because I want to go in off book just because I feel
keep
like
going.
I want to play right off the bat, you know.
Good.
So, but
we spent the summer working.
Yeah, we did.
Workshopping this full length.
And that was
Boxes.
Fun. That was a lot of fun doing the read throughs and stuff. So, you'd mentioned earlier about being an older woman, how hard it is to get roles. And for me as a trans woman and older too, this is, it's kind of a niche situation. You know, sometimes they can bend things a little bit, and I don't mind. I'll play male, I'll play female, I'll play whatever people want me to play. Like in that Much Ado this summer that I was in, I played male in that. Mm-hmm. But, this role has a role for a trans woman in it, which I'm grateful you're letting me do this role. And so that was... that's one of the few times I get to kind of just go in there, and it's not certainly not myself, no role ever is, but it's like, oh, this is, I know a little bit more about this character than other people would know.
And it's not your story.
No.
A specific story.
No.
But you have a lot to bring to the role.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes it so much richer. And this role cannot be done by anyone other than a trans actress.
Yeah, I think, you're right.
Yes. It would be a falsehood. It would be, it just would not, it would not work.
No, it wouldn't.
So I'm lucky that, you know, you were there kind of at the very beginning.
Yeah, right towards it. Yeah, that's for sure. I think, yes. But anyway, so that's going to be cool. And so what are you writing now? Are you in the middle of a writing project now that you can talk about?
Well, I've been taking the plays, the short plays that I have, which are usually 10 to a half an hour, 10 minutes to half an hour. And the ones that people have said, you know, this really should be a longer play, or I want to know what happened afterwards. I've taken two of them, which was Minister of Sorrow and Boxes, and now I am working on Finding Mother Courage, which is a short of mine.
Yeah, that's a good title. Yeah. So is Minister of Sorrow.
Yeah.
I have some of my songs. I had A Man of Constant Sorrow.
Oh,
and then
yes,
I had a song by the band.
George Clooney.
By the band Ministry, which had nothing to do with it, but I just thought that'd be cool. That's and Elvis cool. Costello, I write the book. But I'm not going to, I have to do my 20 minute till the hour stuff now, but I'm not going to play any music because I don't want to cut into our talk session. So I'm just going to go right to these messages. So stay tuned, everybody.
Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. for Solidarity Spokane, the Inland Northwest's local labor hour, hosted by Cat Sabotage, elevating the voices of everyday workers and worker organizations, fighting for your rights in the workplace and fostering community solidarity. Join us here to reclaim control over your own destiny by reclaiming the conditions and products of your labor. That's Mondays at 4 p.m. here on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. An injury to one is an injury to all.
KYRS wants your brand new car. Well, not really. Yes, indeed, it's a great feeling to finally get another car after the old one's been breaking down over and over. It's another great feeling to get even more use out of an old car. Here's how. Donate it to KYRS. Car donors get a membership, a tax deduction, and the satisfaction of really helping out. Just call toll-free 855-KYRS. Car. That's 855-597-7227. Honk, honk.
All right. We are back, and I'm talking to my friend Pam Kingsley, and we are talking about, the process of writing and the tools. We talked about computers, and is there a setting that you like to sit in when you write, or you do it any place?
I like there to be a window in front of me.
Okay.
I don't like to feel like I'm closed in a box.
Yeah.
I want to feel like I can actually access the world outside.
Okay. I'm just the opposite.
Are you?
I am. I love to have, I don't mind claustrophobic spaces. I kind of.
Really?
Yeah, when I was doing not trench rescue, but hazmat stuff where we would have to go into like confined spaces and
you
stuff.
You lease MRIs?
Yeah, and I'm like, I told my wife, I go, it was kind of cool crawling through these tunnels.
Oh,
you know?
Gosh, I think that's
and
awful.
She goes, she goes, oh, what? Let me guess. Mildly comforted. I go, yes, because that was something.
Swaddled,
yeah. And so, yeah, so I'm really like, I'm usually like in a really confined space.
Oh.
Yeah. So let's see. Oh, I was going to ask you, when you went to, when you researched Appalachia.
Yes, Appalachia.
And then you went there.
Yes.
What are some things that you learned about Appalachia that you didn't know before or kind of were different than how you thought it would be?
Well, of course, different parts of Appalachia are different, you know, in terms of, what? I was in North Carolina. The Appalachia I'm writing about is Kentucky. They're different accents.
Yeah.
They have different communities. But one of the things that I found very interesting was that it takes a while for, when I was in North Carolina, not for the play that we're doing. But in North Carolina, it took a while for my ear to become accustomed to the accent.
Okay.
It wasn't difficult. I mean, it happened within, you know, several minutes. But there's a whole different lilt and rhythm and, you right. know. And when I wrote the play, I wrote it in my rhythm.
Oh, interesting.
And I was so interested to see how that translated into a true Appalachian cadence. And it worked. And one of the things that was really interesting at the beginning of that particular play is that she did an Appalachian, the 65-year-old woman did an Appalachian stomp throughout this house of the theater, which was a big old barn that used to be used as a for a summer stock for Broadway
oh, wow.
shows to come through. And she did a stomp, an Appalachian stomp, while the musician Muse played on stage throughout this auditorium. And because it's a barn, there was this woman, the 65-year-old woman, doing a stomp throughout.
Reverberating through
it. It was just so fascinating, you know, because it was very natural to them to have yeah. that happen. The thing that about Minister of Sorrow at Stage Love Theater, December 6th through 22nd.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask when that was.
Is that this theater is so wonderfully intimate.
Yeah.
That the audience is right there with yeah. with Emma, Hazel Bean, who plays Emma. As I'm very excited.
I'm too. Did when you were down there? Did
can you tell?
Yeah. Did you? You're so good with voices. Did you start kind of picking up the voice a little bit?
Oh, was I talking a little?
No.
You can't help but kind of get into that yeah. rhythm, because when everybody's talking that rhythm to you,
yes.
you kind of slide into it.
Yeah.
But you don't. You have to be careful because you don't want.
You don't want to be aping.
Yes, yeah. there's something not so nice.
I know
about that.
But it is. It's a tough one to avoid. I always feel like have you? So you're so productive as far as writing. Have there ever been any big lulls in your creativity? Like right now?
Like right now.
Okay. That works.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I can't write and do a play. I can't write and direct. When we were working on the project just recently,
yeah.
I couldn't write during that. When I did Good People... a year ago, I couldn't write during that rehearsal process or production process. When I direct, I can't write. I can't do, I need my focus
yeah.
completely on the project if
right.
I'm writing.
That makes sense. What inspires you these days or gives you hope? How's that? Inspires you or gives you hope? I'll let you choose that. Anything? Hey, I'm sitting right across from you. I mean...
Yes, you do. Yeah, you do. You do, Maeve. I'm endlessly inspired by you waving your arms
okay.
in the air.
No, really. What really does? Does something inspire you? I mean...
Yes, the resilience of the human spirit
yeah.
is what inspires me and gives me hope. And in particular, and I was talking with a couple of people today about it, and one of the people said, well, our spirit is infused in our art.
Oh, I love that.
And as long as art keeps going, our spirit keeps going. The more art we make, the greater the spirit that encompasses our entire community, beyond our community, the world. So if there's a way to fight back besides being very informed and knowing what is going on.
Yeah, knowing what the truth is.
Knowing what yeah. the truth is. make art.
Hey, amen, amen. I always think, like, you know, we're living in destructive times and where destruction is really worshipped by a few, and lying is worshipped by, well, I guess this election for me, that was the hardest part, was that not that he won, but that I found out what a majority of Americans were about, you know, to some level. And that was a little disheartening for me.
I'm very confused by it.
Yeah.
I still haven't figured it out quite. Yeah.
But I just know that it's not, and that's good to be gifted that knowledge, is that things aren't how I thought they were. So for me, it's like to create is the opposite, is working against those who would destroy. So by creating art. And then also by being a truth teller is kind of showing people that you can tell the truth, and maybe the truth is a good thing.
Oh, sure. And, you know, the truth is in our art.
Yeah.
It comes out of creation, of creating. It's different kinds of truth, but it stands for honesty projected from, I think, the soul.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to say, and I'm not really into talking about politics these days.
Yeah, me neither.
Right now.
Yeah.
But we've been lied to years and years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
The only difference is that we're seeing it right up
so
in our face, yeah. So blatant.
Yeah.
A lot of times we're lied to and it's obfuscated.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But we tell the truth to each other.
Yeah.
We'll be okay.
And
we
think
keep
that truth,
telling the truth to each other.
Yeah. And I think that truth, you know, in art, like, you know, I go to a play and I don't care what it's about, but I'm usually moved to tears at some point, whether it's a funny play or whether it's a musical, mm-hmm. because there's such a truth in that. And same thing standing in front of a painting sometimes,
uh-huh.
in a gallery or in a museum. It's uh-huh. just like, there's a truth in this thing.
Yes.
And it just brings tears to my eyes.
Or a piece of music.
Or a piece of music.
Yes.
Yeah, something lovely like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And I believe that what art does for us is it helps us grieve.
Okay.
And I think some of the tears that we get rid of during emotional moments, whether it's funny or not, is helping us get rid of a lot of the grief and sorrow and angst inside of us.
Oh, I can see that.
And yeah, I really believe that.
It's
very helpful,
I think. I believe it too. I think something gets unlocked. Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like we are out of time.
No,
it's
true. It isn't so.
I know. It really happens fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's a joy to sit with you.
Oh, likewise. You and I would when we work on projects.
Oh,
to sit in the coffee shop.
15 minutes of work and an hour and a half of laughter.
I know. I've always been like a workplace detriment.
And I say, at some point, you must tell your stories.
Oh, yeah.
To a wider audience, because.
Okay. Maybe after the statute of limitations.
Well, you know, I think it should be, you know, you'd do great at the comedy club.
Oh, well.
I think you should take a one-woman show to the comedy club.
That would be a fun thing to do.
Yes.
That would be a fun
and
thing
document
to...
it. It can be a docudrama.
Yeah.
Oh, a documentary.
Yeah.
On...
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. And they could use it at my trial later. It'd be handy for everybody. So, all right. Thanks, Pam. Thanks everybody,
you,
for tuning in to
I
love you. And thanks for tuning in to KYRS Medical Lake. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. Let's do this right. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. any farmer can tell you, if you want to harvest a crop, you've got to get out of the office and go to work in the field. Why can't the Democratic Party grasp this basic reality when it comes to producing votes? This year was going to be different. Pressed by progressive rural activists, National Party leaders agreed to open a network of get-out-the-vote offices in rural areas of battleground states. Spoiler alert, Kamala Harris won fewer votes there than Biden harvested 4 years earlier. What happened? Very little, and too late. Opening a campaign office is hardly the same as being there for the long haul, building trust and nurturing local support. Harris was behind from the start, though, since Joe Biden's Democratic Party operation had not bothered to hire any rural staffers or even prepare an agenda. Apparently, their idea of a good rural program was hee-haw. The Harris campaign did put out a plan, but in September, just 2 months before the vote. Also, they had too many, quote, rural strategists and too few ground-level organizers at campaign headquarters. Those organizers did their best, but were mostly disregarded by campaign consultants. For example, a good list of rural surrogates was recruited but never used. Worse, Harris herself was absent. She was never scheduled to visit a farm or even pay a culturally symbolic visit to a state fair. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Democrats' real problem is not any one campaign, but more than a decade of policy and political abandonment of rural communities. Do the smart political honchos in Washington think that people out here don't notice the party's absence and disregard for them? Again, any farmer knows you can't harvest a crop if you don't plant one and cultivate it. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
You are listening to KYRS, Medical Lake, Spokane. Best heard on 88.1 or 92.3 on your FM dial.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM and 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
Summit here in Baku, Azerbaijan. This is Democracy Now!
The IPCC is clear in terms of our capacity still to be able to reach a strong 2030 goal. And that could happen if we focus our efforts and if we are able to create a process of synergy, collaboration, and global solidarity.
As negotiations continue here at the UN Climate Summit, we'll speak to Colombia's chief negotiator, Environment Minister Susana Mohamed. She just chaired the UN Biodiversity Conference in Cali. We'll talk about Colombia's pledge to phase out fossil fuels, efforts to decrease deforestation, and